introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order.
Launch control. We are going for launch.
Strolling, ramming, and jamming. You are listening to the Casey Ferguson Show on Emerson Island Radio 92.1 FM. Yes, it's Casey Ferguson here, coming at you from Motel Ferguson, my den of stiff libations and good vibrations. Which is really just a fancy way of saying I'm sitting in my crappy apartment, half pickled and fully tickled, that you decided to tune in to another late night hour of power here on Island Radio. From the album By Your Side, that was the Black Crowes kicking things off with Kicking My Heart Around. I've got a frothy mug full of a show for you under medicated rapscallions. My guest on this episode of the Casey Ferguson Show is Matt Brooks from the band Like a Storm. Not only have Like a Storm shared the stage with the likes of Alter Bridge, Puddle of Mud, Shinedown, and Blackfield Brides, they are also the highest charting band ever to hail from New Zealand. In addition to that interview, I also have some killer tracks on the way from Veins of Jenna, Jimi Hendrix, and a few of the incredible artists that will be performing at Voodoo Rock Fest in Napanee. Which is where I will be while you're listening to this, which explains why I'm kicking it here at Motel Ferguson pre-recording this show for you lunatics.
Obviously, the time continuum has been disrupted, creating this new temporal event sequence resulting in this alternate reality.
English, Doc.
I will be indisposed as the official MC of the festival, and I wanted to make sure that if you couldn't make Voodoo Rock Fest for whatever reason, that you had something on the radio worth cranking up. I'll talk more about Voodoo Rock Fest a little later on, but right now, I want to rock. This is the Jeffrey Brothers on Amherst Island Radio 92.1 FM.
Turn it up.
Nothing.
Born and bred to rip and shred, you are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show on Emerson Island Radio 92.1 FM. From the album Awaken the Fire, that was Like a Storm with Wish You Hell. Before that, you heard from Veins of Jenna with a rockin' rendition of the Tom Petty classic Refugee. And kicking off that set was the Jeffrey Brothers with I Wanna Rock. You know, it seems there's always an abundance of absurdity in the news, and I don't just mean the current American election. As farcical and ridiculous as a Trump versus Hillary election is, try this story on from the Canadian Press, released August 27th. Toronto police say a naked tomato thief is on the loose in Toronto's West End. They say at about 8 p.m., officers received a call about a naked man who was seen in a residential backyard, quote-unquote, soaping himself up and washing off with a hose. The garden intruder then took off with tomatoes from the backyard. Toronto police say officers arrived at a home near Indian Grove and Dundas Street West, but the man had fled the scene. A search was conducted in the neighborhood, but police say the man or the tomatoes could not be found. Now, there are a lot of things that are head-scratching about this story, but a few things jumped out at me here. First off, the Toronto Police Service has approximately 5,400 uniformed officers slash undercover officers and 2,500 civilian employees, making it the largest municipal police service in Canada. Its officers are also among the best paid in the country. Yet, they couldn't find a naked man wandering around in one neighborhood that even stopped to take a shower with a garden hose and had time to pilfer a few tomatoes? Come on. What in the flying hell are they doing looking for the tomatoes? Don't worry, officers, I'm sure they'll turn up at a bus station washroom real soon. Maybe you should put a picture of the missing tomatoes on the side of a milk carton. Just saying. And for the record, the garden intruder sounds like the worst supervillain name of all time. Holy cucumber Robin! We must stop the garden intruder. Who knows what kind of depraved things he's doing to all those defenseless vegetables? Yes, that just happened. As I mentioned earlier, my guest on this episode of the Casey Ferguson Show is Matt Brooks from the band Like a Storm. Not only have Like a Storm shared the stage with Korn, Steel Panther, Hell Yeah, Blackstone Cherry, and Shinedown, among others, the single Love the Way You Hate Me was number one on SiriusXM Octane in North America for 5 weeks. Its stateside success makes the band the highest charting New Zealand rock act in U.S. radio history. This is my interview with Matt Brooks of Like a Storm on The Casey Ferguson Show. Alright, I'm Casey Ferguson. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. I got Matt Brooks of Like a Storm on the phone. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing great, thanks, Casey. Thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, hey, man. Glad to have you. I gotta get a good hello, mate.
Well, that sounds a bit more like Michael Caine.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I really kind of screwed that up.
But I will say g'day, mate, which is how it sounds in New Zealand.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, wrong accent altogether. I totally blew it.
At least if they need an extra for Oliver Twist or something, you know you've got the gig, right?
Yeah, please, sir, can I have some more?
Exactly.
I've been practicing. Not the New Zealand accent, apparently, but nonetheless. Anyways, enough of that shenanigans. Obviously, you guys are from New Zealand, and the highest charting act ever out of New Zealand, which is pretty incredible. I mean, that must be quite an honor.
It is, man. I mean, you know, there's a ton of talented musicians in New Zealand, and there have been some New Zealand musicians, you know, who've done amazing things worldwide, but we're kind of the only band in our genre who has managed to do what we've done lately, and it's a huge honor because there are so many awesome rock bands from New Zealand that it's, you know, we're kind of proud to be flying the flag and showing people that there's great rock all over the world.
Absolutely. Well, that's sort of what I was getting at. What I wanted to ask about was, I mean, what's the music scene like over there? I mean, is there a lot of clubs to play? Like, you know, a lot of bands? Like, what's going on over there?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you know, we all grew up, my brothers and I, we all grew up playing in different bands. You know, you just play with your mates in the weekend and there are clubs to play. And I mean, there's a ton of amazing musicians in New Zealand. Every time I go home, actually, I'm kind of struck by just the amount of talent that's there. The only thing about New Zealand, you know, the best thing about it is that it's paradise and it's kind of isolated from the rest of the world, but that's also the worst thing about it for a touring band.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You know, you have to be around people to tour, and New Zealand is amazing, but it's a small country, and for a rock band especially, I think, you know, touring is really the lifeblood of rock and roll, and it's kind of how you grow into yourself as a band, and it was at that point that we felt that maybe we needed to look outside of New Zealand to have more opportunity.
Now, did you guys already have a label deal in place or something when you moved to the States, or?
No way, dude. We just had this crazy idea of, you know, following our dream. We didn't even know anyone in North America. We just always had this dream of playing music, and it's always kind of been like an adventure. And to be honest, I think it's that approach to it that allows you to kind of weather the ups and downs of the music industry. You know, if it's always just like this adventure where you're getting to do what you love and meet awesome people and do interesting things, then, you know, I think it's that attitude that led us to leave New Zealand, and it's that attitude that has, you know, kept us playing music for as long as we have.
Well, and like, I played for a lot of years. I got into my first band at 13 and, you know, toured and everything till I was about 29. And that's one thing I really wished that I had done more of, actually, you know, enjoying the journey as opposed to always looking for that destination. So what advice would you give to a young band coming up right now?
To be honest, I would say just play for the love of it, man. You know, you start out playing music because you love it. And I think in the middle, it's possible to be pulled away from that by people trying to influence you to, you know, do things that in their opinion will be better for your career or better for their career. And ultimately, you know, that's not why you get into music in the first place. And I think it's so important to make sure that you're just playing the music that you love because you love it. And I think if you do that, then you'll always have fun doing it. And ultimately, that's why any of us got into playing music, because we love it.
Absolutely. Now, you guys are known as the pioneers of didgeridoo metal. I mean, I know you guys are from New Zealand, but what possessed you to use the didgeridoo in a metal song? I mean, were you guys, you know, did you have a couple of pints and, you know, decide, hey, you know what would be a good idea? I mean, it really does work. I mean, I love what you guys have done, but it's strange that no one's ever seemed to do it before. And just like, how did you guys stumble upon that? Or was it something that you wanted to do for a long time? How did at work?
You know, I mean, it really is something that we stumbled across. I think what kind of led up to that is that we grew up being huge fans of artists who kind of pushed the envelope, you know, like Tool or Nine Inch Nails or even Bjork or The Prodigy. We always loved people who brought something new to whatever style of music they were in. So we've always had that approach. But as far as actually incorporating didgeridoo, you know, Chris taught himself how to play it after a trip to Australia. And he taught himself how to play it in 3 days, which is insane.
Wow. Yeah, I hear they're really hard to play.
Yeah, especially with circular breathing. I mean, to be quite honest, you know, I mean, I can't play didge. Some people spend their whole lives trying to learn how to play it. And for some reason, Chris got the hang of it straight away. And as soon as he started playing it, we just thought it was like the most awesome sound we'd ever heard. And so that just became one of those things that we wanted to try and incorporate. You know, we just saw it as an opportunity to push our music in a new direction. And on our most recent album, Awaken the Fire, that was the first time that we actually paired the didgeridoo with heavy rock instruments, which is what we've called didgeridoo metal. You know, it's didgeridoo with distorted riffs and double kicks. And this kind of combination of things that we'd never heard done before. And we didn't know if it was going to work or not. We just thought, you know, it was one of the crazy ideas that we wanted to try. And when we first heard it in playback and we heard the didge and those rock instruments all mixed in together, you know, we just felt like it was something really cool there. And it's just become a bigger and bigger part of our sound.
Now, you guys also wrote, produced and recorded Awaken the Fire, which is kind of unusual these days that people, I mean, there's a lot of home recording going on, but for a band of your stature to be handling all those, I mean, did you find it hard to wear all those hats, or was it just very gratifying to have control over your end product?
You know, I think we've kind of grown up always wearing those hats, you know. We've always been really interested in recording, and we've always produced our own demos. Kent and Chris and I, my two brothers and I, we all grew up as songwriters and loving a good song and just wanting to make music the best that we could. So I suppose in a lot of ways, we've always been approaching our music from the point of view of a producer. And with Awaken the Fire, we had the opportunity to sort of see out our vision, and we had been very lucky because we made an EP that included Love the Way You Hate Me, and we produced that ourselves. And at that point, we'd never produced anything, you know, anything serious before, and so you kind of don't know if you know what you're doing. But what we did know is that we had an idea for the kind of music that we wanted to make, and we had a vision, and we just wanted to see whether or not we could realize it. And Love the Way You Hate Me sort of took off at radio and took on a life of its own. At that point, we were completely independent, and it ended up, you know, breaking the top 40 on radio with no label behind us or no management behind us. I mean, it was just kind of crazy, unheard of.
Well, did you guys even have a road crew at this point?
No. We didn't have anything. It was just my brothers and I was just, you know, making our music and putting it out and going on tour for our fans. And off the strength of that, we got signed to a great label who really believe in us, and they said, you know, we loved what you guys did on your own, so we want you guys to produce this full-length album. And it was just an amazing compliment to us, and I think it was really validating, because we really put ourselves on the line initially by having this idea that we could realize our own vision, and we thought that maybe we could make music that stacked up. It was really validating to have the label say, you know, actually of all the producers that we're thinking of, we think you guys would be the best at, you know, realizing your vision. So it's something that we're really proud of.
Well, it's pretty incredible to hear that, you know, there's still some labels out there that have that kind of faith in their artists.
Yeah, I mean, that was really one of the main things that we love about our label, is that they truly are fans of music, and they believe in the bands that they sign. Now, I think for a lot of bands, and we have been through something like this previously in our career too, you can be with a company who, after a while, are just trying to turn you into whatever's on the radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think that you start as a kid in your bedroom with a dream of playing your music, that's not where you see it ending up. So it means a lot to us to be signed to a label who do believe in us and allow us to, you know, express ourselves creatively, because ultimately that's why we got into it.
Well, Matt, I want to compliment you as well. I'm a big slide guitar fan, and you guys incorporated some slide guitar on Wish You Hell, and I really dig the tune. I was wondering, you know, if you had a couple favorite slide players.
Actually, the slide player in our band is Chris.
Oh, okay.
So Chris, who's our lead singer, he plays slide, and actually Kent plays guitar too. So, you know, when you look at us playing on stage, the band seems pretty simple, but actually what goes on behind the scenes is that all three of us play a range of different instruments. So for the most part, any one instrument could have been played by any of us. In our touring, you know, we spent a lot of time in the South, and we also spent a lot of time in Chicago, and we just kind of fell in love with blues, and Chris in particular really got into slide guitar. You know, there was something, you know, Ry Cooder is one of his favorite players, and he has, you know, he just listens to that music all the time. And when we wrote Wish You Hell, we just thought that it was the perfect vehicle for this whole new genre that we were really getting into. And what Chris really brought to that in a blues aspect was slide. So the song showcases a lot of slide playing, and that was Chris kind of showing this new style of guitar playing that he was getting really into.
Well, another track I really love from you guys is Ordinary. Tell me about that song. Where was that coming from, you know, lyrically, you know, what was going on in the recording process and what have you? Because it's a bit of a different song on the album. Where did that fall in the, you know, in the process of recording? Was it an early song? Was it a late song? That sort of thing.
Ordinary is really interesting, because Ordinary is actually a song that I started writing shortly after we had left New Zealand. And it's a song about, you know, wanting to lead a life that you truly believe in, and lead a life that has purpose. And it was written at a time where we had moved from New Zealand with this big dream, you know, this crazy adventure that we talked about. But there was a point in time where, you know, it hasn't always been the easiest road to take. And I'm sure any musician will tell you, there are huge ups, but there are huge downs as well, and there are huge obstacles that you have to overcome. Ordinary was written at a time where the streets weren't paved with gold. It looked like maybe the path to getting where we wanted wasn't as easy as we thought it would be. And what was cool about it is that we revisited that song when we made Awaken the Fire, and we just felt that the sentiment and the emotion behind that song still sits so perfectly with our vision for the album. You know, it's a song about leading the life that you believe in, and the kind of struggles that you have to overcome in order to do that sometimes. And from a recording point of view, it was really interesting too, because, you know, the rest of the album is so layered and cinematic, and Ordinary is just a vocal. It's actually me singing on that song. It's a vocal and acoustic guitars and strings, and that's it. And the challenge was to make the songs feel as big and as epic as the other songs on the record, even though it only had like 1/10 of the instruments.
Great job on that, man. I didn't know that was you, actually.
Yeah, well, jumping off from what I was saying before, we all came from different bands playing different instruments, so there are different combinations of us doing different stuff on every song, but one of the things that we have on our records is that I tend to sing, two or three songs on every album, and unless people have seen us live, they don't know. It's kind of funny, actually, last night in Seattle, we were playing Ordinary, and even though I'm singing it, people still look at Chris because they expect the lead singer to sing,
Yeah.
So that's just one of the fun things about being in this band is that we get to do different stuff and kind of share different parts of the music.
Well, and I suppose I'm partly mixed up because, with how things work with this show is usually I get sent like an album download link or something, but I don't get to sit down and read the liner notes and everything like I would just when I buy an album. So, it kind of goes, I kind of did the same thing everybody else did. It's like, okay, well, this guy's probably singing all the songs and so on and so forth. And
don't feel bad about it. You're definitely not the first person. I mean, our liner notes would be like the Dead Sea Scrolls or something. Actually had every part of who played what. Because we also do our own programming and stuff too, and Kid plays guitar on the records. And the music is, I think the easiest way to explain it is just that it's made by like the three of us as if we were a team. So any part of any instrument, whether it's a lyric or a guitar riff or a piano part, anything is just produced by one of the three of us. That's kind of the simplest way to explain it.
Right.
And then when we play live, that's when we say, okay, well, you're going to play this guitar part and you're going to play this bass part and you're going to sing this. But the writing and recording process is much more of a free-for-all.
Right. Well, and I suppose because you're family, you don't spend a bunch of time bickering over percentages and stuff either, right?
No, we have, we just have an arrangement among the three of us because we all just want to make the best music. I think that was something that we really clicked on when we first started playing together is that, everybody has every human being has, on some level a sense of ego and pride and that kind of thing. But what's more important than that to us is to create the best music possible. So it's pretty crazy how well it works actually with three guys sort of writing all the different parts as a team.
Well, and maybe if there had been a third brother with Oasis, those guys would still be together. Who knows? I don't. Maybe there is. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. Third brother, they might be dead or something. I don't know.
Yeah. They might have killed them off when they were kids. Who knows?
Yeah, those guys are so talented, but man, they're pretty flashy.
Yeah, well, and if there was any kind of middle brother, I'm sure, if they didn't kill him, he'd probably off himself, because there's just, there's no putting up with that.
Yeah, they certainly have the rock and roll attitude down, that's for sure.
Now, I don't know if you feel like talking about this, man, and, I understand we'll move on if not, but because you guys toured with Creed, I mean, what did you make of the whole Scott Stapp thing? I mean, did you see any warning signs when you guys were on tour together or anything, or was he, pretty much normal at that point?
The funny thing that we have is that we've toured with Scott and Creed a lot, and we've also toured with Scott as a solo artist, and we've never seen anything other than this incredibly generous, family-orientated, down-to-earth guy. Scott's always gone out of his way to make us feel comfortable, whether it was the first tour we ever did of America, which was opening for Creed in 2009, to when we played with him as a solo act, where we, had spent a lot more time with him and knew them a lot better. So, it was really sad to see what happened. And, Scott and his wife, Jackie, have been so good to us. We know their kids and their families. And I think it was sad to see him go through that. And I think if people had the chance to see him on the level that we have, I think a lot of people might feel differently about what he's going through.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for the guy. It was really a tragic and horrible situation there.
Yeah, and it's, it's not unheard of that, someone who's really, almost prodigious creatively would, there's a lot of very talented people who go through, mental health problems, or there's just, for whatever reason, there's a huge connection between between creativity and that kind of thing. So he's someone who I've always thought was a huge inspiration, and I'm pleased to see that. I see that he's now, you know, looking at going out on tour again, and I just think it's awesome to see that he's getting back to doing what he's so amazing at.
Now, what are you at for time, Matt? Do you got time for a few more, or do you got a split?
You know, I hate to say it, but I probably have to split. I think my next phoner is about now.
All right, well, I'll leave you be.
Thanks, dude. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me, man. I'm sorry that we have to cut it off there.
Oh, hey, no worries. We can always do this again down the road, man. And thanks for the great music. I really, really enjoy the tunes.
That means a lot, bro. Thank you very much.
You have a good time with all these other chats, man. And like I said, might talk to you down the road.
Hell yeah, dude.
Part talk show, part rock show, you are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show on Emerst Island Radio 92.1 FM. That was my conversation with Matt Brooks of Like a Storm. For all things Like a Storm related, check out likeastorm.com. I'd like to take this opportunity to not only thank Matt for his time, but also The Casey Ferguson Show's exclusive island radio sponsor, Overtime Sports Bar and Concert Venue, located at 1677 Bath Road in Kingston, Ontario. For my money, the best stage, sound and lights in the Kingston area, so touring bands, if you're thinking about making a Kingston stop, I would recommend you get in touch with Overtime about setting up a gig. Concert lovers, I'd also recommend that you check out Overtime Sports Bar's Facebook page and hit them with a like so that you can stay updated on all of the events going on at this fine establishment. Overtime really is a great venue to perform at or enjoy a show, and of course I thank them for helping to keep independent radio alive by sponsoring The Casey Ferguson Show. During my interview with Matt, we discussed the track Ordinary from Like a Storm's album Awaken the Fire. It seems only fitting that I would play it for you, so here is Like a Storm with Ordinary on Amherst Island Radio 92.1 FM. more of The Casey Ferguson Show? You can download all episodes of the show at CaseyFergusonShow.com. Plus, bonus content, prize giveaways, polls, and much more, only at CaseyFergusonShow.com. One more time for the hard of hearing, that's CaseyFergusonShow.com. making your knees freeze and your liver quiver, you are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show on Amherst Highland Radio 92.1 FM. From the album Rising of the Sword, that was Kingston's own Revmatic with Fire in Disguise. Before that, you heard from Double Experience with their version of Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla, and kicking off that set was Like a Storm with Ordinary. Both Revmatic and Double Experience will be performing at Voodoo Rock Fest at the Napanee Fairgrounds September 23rd, 24th, and 25th. 26 bands in total will take the stage over the three-day festival, including Wild Tea and the Spirit, Amberwood, Project 29, Logan Brown, and Metronome Jones. If you're listening to this show as it first airs, then there will still be time for you to attend, so look up Voodoo Rock Fest at musicfly.ca or head over to the Voodoo Rock Fest Facebook page for ticket information. There are all kinds of things going on at this festival in addition to the music. There's food trucks, craft beer, vendors, camping. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I'll be there as the event's MC. Amherst Island Radio is going to be there live on location as well, so swing out and join us for Voodoo Rock Fest if at all possible.
All right, then.
It's about damn time we had a rock festival in this neck of the woods. Looks like I'm getting low on time, so I'm going to spin you a quick track here, and I'll be back to bid you farewell. This next band were voted Female Performers of the Year and Most Underrated Band in Metal Edge Magazine's Reader's Poll back in 99, but unfortunately they disbanded shortly thereafter in 2000. I like to showcase the underrated on this program, so here is Drain STH with Enter My Mind on The Casey Ferguson Show. To handle and too cold to hold, you're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show on CJAI 92.1 FM. Taking you back to the late 90s there, that was Drain STH with Enter My Mind. Well, that's it for me, kids. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Oh, I forgot to mention in the last break, there's going to be several tribute acts performing at Voodoo Rock Fest as well, including tributes to Motley Crue, Tool, Stone Temple Pilots, Pearl Jam, and This Man. I'm going to hit you with a little Jimmy that Oh, wait, that's just sautéed in wrong sauce. Jimi Hendrix will play us out with a tune called Highway Child. How's that?
I hope he doesn't take his penis out.
Remember, it's only an island if you look at it from the water. Until next time, this is Casey Ferguson, over and out.
Around and did a pretty wrong. They tell me it's